What did bring you to Fürth?
Well, I was in England, in London, and I died. And they said, you can't go to heaven. Either you go to hell or you go to Nuremberg. And ich mach falsch. I've been in Nuremberg.
Okay. And you're in Fürth. Okay.
Now you want the real reason now. Uh-huh. I avoided coming to Germany for many years. I knew that in Germany, it was actually the best conditions for playing music in Europe, if not the world, since the 50s and 60s in the Hamburg scene. In Germany, I knew you were treated like a professional. If you play a concert some distance away, you must have a hotel, food and drink, and a proper gage, a proper wage for doing it. The reason that I resisted was because I'm Jewish and I had indoctrination and discriminatory thoughts against Germany. But I'm very glad that I did. I've been here since 1996, so it's 20 years. And in the middle, I was 4 years in America. Mm-hmm. That was when the Euro came. It was, as you know, had a very bad effect here, and lots of places were closing down, and music places, and I thought I'd go and exist in America. I knew I could exist in America, and that's basically what I did. But I'm glad I came back, and it's been much better since I came back because I appreciated it more, sort of the second time. Those things that I don't like about this area, it doesn't matter so much. Well, I actually started playing guitar when I was about 6 or 7. Both of my brothers play guitar. And I can't remember exactly how I learnt, but I know I very quickly learnt, because by the age of 10, I was doing concerts. And it was kind of a novelty. You know, here you call it protégé, but I wasn't really anyone's protégé. But I could play sufficiently that I could do the concerts. And by being so young, of course, people were interested. By the time I was about 16 or 17, of course, there were other people that were playing, and it wasn't so unique. But it was kind of fun. I was always very nervous at these concerts, but I could play proficiently. To give you an example, I could finger pick at 10 properly. And I had a favourite country blues guitarist who was called Mississippi John Hurt. And I could play nearly every one of his songs. And if you make some investigation into Mississippi John Hurt, this is not basic stuff. This is quite complicated. So I was very proficient. And really, around the time of my teenage years, when I was 16, 17, 18, I was really much better than I am now. And I guess much less inhibitions in the playing. A lot of the playing is the naturalness of the playing. You know, it's all electronic impulses to the fingers and whatever. But it feels like actual tactile memory, the memory of the fingers. And when you're younger and you indulge in certain substances from the Orient, you don't have any blocks. So I was playing very well then, when I was a teenager.
So did you learn that all by yourself from listening to
other musicians? I just picked things up. It's very funny. Around exactly the same time, in my primary school, a horrible woman came into the class and spoke to the teacher. And she asked the teacher, who is the best singer in the class? And the teacher pointed to me. And she said, right, you're learning the violin. So from the age of 7 to about 12 or 13, I learnt the violin and I hated it. Of course, now I would have appreciated learning it. But at the time, I hated it. I never practiced. I had exams every year, including exams that got me kind of scholarships, free tuition. And I just passed this exam. If the pass was 100, I get 101 or 102 without practicing. But the problem with the violin was, even after 4 or 5 years, I couldn't play the simplest tune well. I played even some complicated stuff, but not well. And the same with the simple stuff. So it was horrible because I didn't get a good sound. Now, when you compare that at the same time with learning the guitar, right from the get-go, as the Americans say, I could make good sounds on it. It's a much easier instrument, of course, than the violin. It has those frets where you put your fingers and everything's clear. And I devoured, I ate, I consumed everything that I heard and that I learned about guitar from my brothers, but also from listening and anything, and I copied and I copied, and I really learnt quickly. And you know, I've quickly learnt the important thing about an instrument. This is not an academic subject. It's not a matter of technical proficiency. It's a matter of being able to play something from the beginning to the end so that people can enjoy it. You can enjoy it and an audience can enjoy it. However simple it is, you can play it. And I couldn't do that on the violin, but I could do it 1,000 times on the guitar. So this was the comparison. So it was quite a difference. As I say, I was what we call press ganged into the violin, but it was terrible. But I wish, of course, I'd learned something now, because I could probably use it for something. But the guitar was very natural. I can't remember exactly how I learned. I never had a teacher, but you know, I just picked up everything.
What do you find interesting in music now? What have you? What is your idea of music now?
Tell me what the Norwegian musician said.
He said, I'm going back to easy melodies, and to I try to be quiet so that the drums can sound, that they have the room to sound. Uh-huh. And I asked him because there was an instrumental that really fascinated me, very easy, but good, a good melody. So, but everybody is different. So, what's your
Music? First of all, I have no drums. I almost always play on my own. What I've learnt, and it's a bit like what you just said about the Norwegian musician, it's very important to play within yourself when you play, not to overextend yourself. If you're playing something very complicated and you're very tense, this is not a live performance. It's not good for the audience. They can see that you don't quite make it or that you're straining to make it. Everything should be done in a relaxed way. And of course, then when you've got these performances in a relaxed way, you can put things into them and you can make different things every time and make interesting things. But the important is to have a solid base so that the audience feel comfortable with you. They don't feel like this is an experiment. You want them to feel like you've done this for 100 years, but it's still fresh. That's the kind of balance. What am I learning? Well, I'm learning, you know, I started off making what you call folk music. And I had a favourite folk musician whose name was Bert Jansch in my formative years. And I played with him. I sat in front of him 50 times in concert. And this he had a style called folk baroque finger picking. Well, when I started playing in noisy pubs and everything, I found this folk music, people aren't listening. So I developed more the blues side of what I do, and I became, because the blues stuff is maybe more rhythmic in the music and harder, and I became very proficient at playing blues music. And I've done that, and people still describe me as a blues musician. I've certainly played with very famous blues musicians, or the best blues musicians ever. When I was a teenager, I played with Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee, who were the most famous blues duo of all time, and other well-known players. And lately I've been playing with Josh White Jr., who's a great folk blues player. But I came to the conclusion in recent years that I'll never be a black American, South American blues singer or player. I can accompany anybody. I can accompany the greatest players, and that's fine. So if I live to be 100 years old, I'll probably be able to play all the blues stuff that was ever written. But I thought I had to live to be 300 years old if I can play all the songs that I can make, that I can write myself. And I have over 200 songs recorded and published. And that's where my interest really is now, playing what you call here in Germany Liedermacher music, like Hannes Fader, Reinhard May, Konstantin Wecher, or even Wolf Biermann. And that's interesting to me. I still love the blues music, but I think my future, for as long as my future is, I really must make more of these Liedermacher concerts. You see, there are many, many songs that I've recorded that I've never played in public. I only recorded them. I have to relearn them as well. And that's what really interests me. I'm not very innovative on guitar playing. I tend to play the same as I always played. I don't really learn new things. Sometimes some new tunes I hear that I like, but I'm not really developing. Some musicians are working all the time and developing and developing. What I like about playing guitar is that it's an accompaniment to the words. For me, the words are almost the most important thing, and the guitar is the accompaniment. So I play the guitar in order to be able to sing the words. And this is a style of some of the great songwriters like Woody Guthrie, for example. His famous quote is, I only use two chords. If you hear me using a third chord, I'm showing off. So important to him was the words, and he wrote as he talked, not just in the dialect, but also in the writing of the songs. He wrote songs as he talked in life. And this is an aspect of blues music and the blues writing of the most well-known blues singers and the most indigenous and those that played in the early days. They write like they talk. And then it's a whole culture. It becomes a culture of their lives. And it's very real. And that's the most important thing. I don't sing Moon in June stuff. I don't sing, you know, sickly rhyming stuff. I don't. And I hope. And a good indication of a good songwriter is you can't guess what the next line will be. When you can guess what the next line will be, there's a problem with the songwriting, in my opinion.
Yeah, then it's Herzschmerzen. About a few years ago, I'm also songwriting, and I collected all my songs. I had a feeling like my children are coming back. So why do you write songs? Why do you write them songs? There are so many blues songs. Why do you write them yourself?
Well, I am addicted to writing. I started at a very early age, about 12 or 13 years old. I still play songs when I was 14 now. I did last weekend, I played one or two. I'm addicted to writing, and to me, you've heard of these people, painters, who say Van Gogh is helping me, you know, or Rembrandt did this through me. Well, I don't say that someone specifically is helping for me, but definitely it comes from some kind of collective consciousness, what I write. And I write very quickly. This is like in the Bob Dylan style of writing, which is very quickly, as opposed to someone like Tom Paxton, famous folk singer from America, who's very working on a song maybe for 6 months till he gets it perfect. I tend to write a thing in 5 or 10 minutes, and then I look at it a couple of weeks later and make some little changes. That's mostly how I do it. But sometimes I look at it after 2 weeks and I really don't know where this stuff has come from. I really do feel it comes from somewhere else, but I'm not going to sound ridiculous and say it comes from a specific person or something. But it comes from somewhere, and the best way to explain it is this stream of consciousness, you know, from collective consciousness. But I love the fact that I can do something original. Mm-hmm. And, you know, anyone can say I don't play a certain song or a certain blues song as well as someone else. But no one can say that about my own songs. I wrote them, they're my songs. Of course, I love it when someone else sings one of my songs and does a good interpretation. But for me, that's really my path, is to write my own songs and carry on. And quite frankly, I could write 100 songs a year. I had to stop myself from writing, because to me, for the song to exist, it has to exist in recorded form or printed form. And that's too much. Costs too much money to make 10 CDs a year. Mm-hmm. So, and of course, people won't buy all these things. So, you know, it's a very big part of my playing, and the music is the actual writing. Mm-hmm. That's the thing that I'm developing or carrying on with. I'm a bit boring, really, with guitar playing. It's not that the guitar playing is boring. People enjoy it. But I haven't really progressed. For example, a good example, I never learnt to play slide guitar, bottleneck guitar. It's a different discipline, but it's on the same instrument. You just put the thing over your finger and you learn how to do it. I've never even bothered to do that. So really, I'm quite lazy with guitar playing. Mm-hmm. New learning new.
There's another song about a Nazi Bürgermeister.
Okay, when you say Reichsprogrammnacht, you mean the Kristallnacht?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
You, I think on the telephone, you introduced yourself after a while as a, I'm not sure about the wording, a non-believing Jew, or...
No.
How did you express it?
I didn't. I'm as Jewish as the most religious Jew. there is no difference in a Jewish person in being Jewish, per se, as the most unbelieving and the most believing. When you're Jewish, unlike other religions, and I don't say this to say Jewish people are different, but it's a definite thing. Judaism is not just a religion, it's a whole life thing. And okay, people that are Catholics or Protestants, evangelists or whatever, may say that about themselves. But you only have to look at the way it works. Many people become evangelists, become Catholic, or become atheist, or become, or always are, even though they're born from a different stream of Christianity or a different kind of religion.
Yes.
I'm afraid once you're Jewish, for better or for worse. You can deny it, you can hide from it, you cannot mention it, but you're still Jewish. Now, of course, this is discriminated against by Jewish people themselves. There are, of course, Hasidic religious Jews in Israel or in the diaspora in Europe that think because you're assimilated, you don't eat kosher food, you don't keep the religious festivals, you don't observe Sabbath, that you're not Jewish. But you're still Jewish if you don't do those things. So, and I'm forever telling people that try to chastise me and try to tell me that I am not a Jew, other Jews, well, I'm as much of a Jew as any other Jew, no matter how religious they are. Am I proud of being Jewish? It's a difficult thing. I'm not ashamed of being Jewish, but it's who I am. It's a kind of a luck thing. People talk about innate stuff, things that you get from when you're born, like innate intelligence. Well, I believe there's something in that. But it's like being born in, you come from London. It's just luck where you're born. And I don't think it's so special coming from London anyway. There's 7 million. There's only 110,000 in Fürth. Is that not more special? I always say Fürth is better than London, and people just laugh. But I mean it. For me, certainly it is. What was the question again?
I even forgot. No, it was just I wanted to tickle the Jewish things. And
okay, if you want,
if you want me
to talk about those two specific songs, I'll do it quickly.
No, I wanted to just you wanted the answer which you gave. What means Judaism to you?
Well, that's
so
what it
I
means.
I think
we
answered that.
And if I wanted to sum it up. Although I've been educated to understand the religious aspects of Judaism, for many years I've studied. Even when I was 13, I studied for a while Mishnah and Rashi, which are the explanations of the Bible by these famous rabbis from 1,000 years ago. Actually, I studied to be a rabbi, but not for a long time, for about 6 months after my bar mitzvah. And I know about the religion, I know a lot of the laws. I can read in Hebrew for prayer purposes very slowly, but I can read. I am much more interested in the social aspect of Jewish and the Jewish history than I am in religious observation. So I am very strong on everything, particularly discrimination against Judaism, and even little things. I object to people saying to me, you're in Germany, you must speak German. To me, this is, it may be logical, and people say this quite innocently, but to me, this is the path to nationalism. For example, when I play in the street, people say, sing auf Deutsch. It's too hard for me. It's not because I'm arrogant and only speak English or sing in English. It's too difficult for me. But shouldn't it be interesting that someone sings in another language? People don't think so. And this, it's just like you drop the Uber Alles from the national anthem. Germany is a very fine place and very interesting place. And this area is a very fine place to live because of the over-regulation. Because of all the rules. Now, of course, it's hard for anybody to, you're always breaking some rule, even when you're parking a car or something is wrong. But the result of all this regulation has good effects. For example, the lack of kriminalisch things here. This is a result of the over. Why do people not commit crimes? because it's verboten. It sounds crazy, but that's the truth. And the same with Judaism. You stop a young girl, 12 years old, in the street, what do you think about Jewish people? Oh, they're wonderful, all that klezmer music and this nice festival. It's really interesting. They've been indoctrinated. You could call it positive discrimination, although I don't like that term and I don't like how it works. But it has worked. So there are good aspects. Mm-hmm. Of course, those people that still have the old discriminations and whatever, they keep quiet about it, except when there's good opportunities, like with the situation with the refugees these days. They feel they are now justified to be racist because they have people that agree with them about this. It's still racism. Mm. A person who's coming in fear of their life from a war-torn country must be given asylum. It doesn't matter if there's 100 million. You'll make it somehow. These people that complain that there's too many refugees here, they should go to Tokyo and see how the most successful businessman lives in a Wohnung one quarter of my size. Yeah. And how, when they get on the U-Bahn there in Tokyo, they have people that are paid to push them in like sardines. So don't tell me about overcrowding. There are people that just don't like to hear people speaking in another language, looking different. And this is discrimination. This is racism. Although these people say, hey, I'm not racist. I just think it's bad with the refugees. So, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. I read about you that they said playing on the streets is also, it's very hard job. Maybe more concerts would do me better, but a church is not a usual concert hall. Right. So
let me tell you the preamble to that.
Yeah.
At 4 or 5 years ago, I had big heart problems. I had 2 heart infarcts.
Yeah.
You're welcome to say this. It doesn't. I'm not ashamed of any of my illnesses. And what it was, they wanted me to go on a cure.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, I had a girlfriend years ago for quite a long time that had multiple sclerosis.
Mm-hmm.
And she went on a cure like a holiday,
mm-hmm.
almost, because it was paid for and she was entitled to it. I was entitled to go on a cure. But to me, it's the most boring thing. I didn't want to go.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to them, look, I will make my own cure. I'll stay at home. I won't do anything. My friends will do Einkaufering for me, mm-hmm. you know, and whatever. And that's what I did. At this time, I began to think. I thought, look, you're over 50 years old now. For 30 years, you've said, okay, I live from playing music. That's good enough. I haven't tried to advance. Most of the big things that were the famous people's when I was a teenager or younger. So I thought to myself, I must do something different now. I must play with some big names now. So I immediately called in my friends, the biggest blues musicians here, Abbie Wallenstein, whatever, so I could play bigger concerts again. I'd just been playing in pubs. And I had this idea of Josh White Jr., who I knew. Mm-hmm. So making my life easier, they said, that was their headline, street musicianship is hard work. I don't say that.
Mm-hmm.
It's show business.
Mm-hmm.
It's not the music you play. As you know, I only play one song, but I play it very well. So someone from another town is always stopping with their money and I'm selling them CDs. That shouldn't be on the recording because they'll prosecute me for that. But hard work? No, there's much harder work. Mm-hmm. What I am proud of is that I've always lived from playing music and I say I've never worked.
Mm.
I looked at my father when I was a little boy. He was a Schreiner, shop fitter.
Yes.
He got up at 6 o'clock in the morning. He came home at 6 o'clock at night. By 8 o'clock, he was falling asleep in front of the television. I had to wake him up to go to bed. At the weekend, he was too tired to do anything. Even at 10 years old, I knew that was not me. I was never going to be... I understood you have to make money, but there was another way. So I'm very proud that I live from playing music.
Mm-hmm.
Now, tell me the question again, excuse me.
Okay, the question is, why would you like to play in churches more?
First of all, because I hate these people that say, I'm a strong believer, I'm a real believer, I'm a real Christian, I'm a real... No, I believe in God, and that's enough to say. And I don't feel that churches or synagogues are the home of God, because, of course, God is everywhere, and I'm quite sure Jesus would have said the same thing. But There's several reasons to play in church, and some of them are nothing to do with religion. One is the good acoustics, or the bad acoustics. It's very interesting, these kind of echoes. The second is that you know, in this case, the audience will not say a word when you're playing. They will be still. The church helps for this. But I feel I have some things to say about belief in God and about goodness and inspiration, as the Americans say. I've certainly written songs on these lines. And I would like to do more church concerts. But now I have to say some bad things. And the bad things are that I've come across churches and pastors and people who work for the church making the music programs, excuse me, that have definitely discriminated and continue to discriminate against me. Some, simply because I'm a street musician, we're not going to have this dirty street musician in our church. That's one. That's extreme. But the general discrimination is the churches have different categories of music. They have classical music. These people have trained, they've studied, they've learnt music, therefore they are acceptable. Opera, very good opera singers, and what they call here in Germany gospel music. And I have to say that gospel music in Germany, one or two exceptions, there's Kay Gounce from America that's a big gospel singer here, one or two others that I know. It's not of a very high standard. And it's also lyrically bereft. What I mean by that, if you're singing repetitively that Jesus loves you and Jesus is saving you, of course we can agree with these things. But the strength of the lyric is not there in the song, and also the singing is not so wonderful, even in German language. So these are the categories that they prefer in church. What is this guy? He plays guitar, he's got no paper qualification. He sings, he's obviously not got a very beautiful voice, he's got a strange kind of voice. How can he be accepted by our congregation or by the people? And that is a discrimination, because I honestly believe, and maybe this sounds a bit pompous, I believe that Jesus would have loved my music and that Jesus would have approved of the songs that I write on the subject of God and belief in God, and even the subjects that I write sometimes against religions. I think I write and I act in a very Christian way. It's impossible to measure, of course, but I believe I am, and I believe I have something to say in a church, and I would love to play 10 or 20 churches every year. But I'm not prepared to fight against people that just are discriminating against me, won't give me a job. I'm not going to press and press and press and say I must have a job. It's up to them in the end. And I can also say it's their loss, as the churches will tell you that I've played in. As St. Clara, that I played in on Sunday, will tell you. I played there before and they wanted me again. And it's not because it's not a question in the church, I feel, of competence, of a very intricate guitar playing or beautiful singing or even very pretty writing. What I do is I present something of a normal person that has something to say about belief in God. And to me, that's the majority of people. And a very great evangelical pastor called Sven Find Eidson, originally from Estonia, who's well into his 80s now, famous pastor, he lives in Neumünster. I stayed with him one or two times because he was the mentor of my friends, the Westerheiders. Martin Westerheider was the director of the diakonie in Puschendorf, and now he's the director of diakonie in Lüneburger Heide. Sven Verdeinsen was his teacher and mentor when he was a young boy. And this man, Sven Verdeinsen, said to me, "You have an advantage over me." I stayed with him in his house. I said, "What is that?" He said, "All my life I've studied theology. And I'm very learned in theology. You know very little about theology. You know stories and some rules. You have, in a way, a clearer path to God than I have. Imagine a Catholic priest saying that. They would never say that. That had to come from an evangelist. And I thought about this, and it's true. And I'm afraid to say this is why I ridicule and am very critical of all this confessional booths and going through people to God, like a priest is a middleman to God. No one is a middleman to God. You can talk to God directly. You know, of course, I also believe that God hears and that God answers. But of course, you know, then we bring on the psychiatric medication.
Okay, this is the streets of London, but I think you never recorded it.
I did actually record it. I recorded it in secret. It's a hidden track on a CD of mine. And sometimes when people buy that CD, I tell them it's on it. It's not written on it. I wanted it there as a secret. First of all, The Streets of London is a fabulous song. A fabulous song. It talks about those people that are downtrodden, that have less than we have, that sleep on the street. You see, here in Nuremberg, we have the Straßenkreuzer. But in actual fact, we have very, very few people that sleep on the street. We still have hostel systems here. In London, there are thousands of people that sleep on the street. And it's a very great song. And it doesn't matter if it's sung 10 million times, it's still a great song. Why do I sing the song repeatedly? Well, first of all, it is a great song. When you play in the street, you want to take the easiest way, excuse me for saying, to make money. Now, say you play 10 songs, and out of those 10 songs, one or two are making you more money. What do? You play those one or two songs more than the other ones. And then eventually you only play those one or two songs, or you only play that one song. But it's also a psychological thing. People like what they already know. Oh, then you should play the 6 songs we know. Well, I can tell you what they are. They're Country Roads, Hotel California, Dirty Old Town, Whiskey in the Jar. You know, this is well known in this area, and mainstream radio still play these songs after 50 years. So, some of them after 50 years, or 30 years. But this one clings good with me. It rests good with me, this song. First of all, of course, I'm from London. I know what the song's about. There's nothing in the song that's untrue. And it applies to the rest of the world as well. When they talk about forgetting about the heroes, as they call them. People don't care. It's, of course, it resounds around the rest of the world. But why do I sing the same song? It's easier. I can play that song for 8 hours on the street, and my mind is detached. It doesn't mean I don't give a good performance of it, but my mind is detached from what I'm doing. And I can look at the people and talk to them. I can talk and sing at the same time and play at the same time. If I have to think about the next song and concentrate on that, it's too much actual, what you love to say here in this area, stress. It's much easier for me to play the one song. Now, I know some people get bored by this, and people ridicule me and say, can you only play one song, etc., etc. Now, there are two types of this question, can you only play one song? There's the put down, oh, you can only play one song, ooh, and then usually a bad word. But then there's the other one. Can you only play one song? Sit down, I'll play you another song. And I do this all the time. So people that make a genuine question of this, I play them another song. And I tell them I have CDs with my own songs and I play concerts. But there are a group of people, and they know who they are, who love to walk past me without stopping. Say, oh, you, and they call me a name, or always play the same song, or, you know, Langweilig and all this sort of thing. And without any further interest in me. Okay, that's up to them. Of course, for street musicians, there are always people that just walk past, or even just people that say bad things to you. But if someone makes a genuine inquiry about, excuse me, I just want to ask you, I've been past you 6 times, you're always playing the same song, why is that? I give them some kind of explanation, and I play them another song. That's it. Mm-hmm. But when some people seem to think it's a concert playing street music. Street music is not a concert. A concert is a concert. And if you want to hear 30 different songs, come to one of my concerts. And I give them the details of the concert. They can look on Facebook. They can look on my website. and see when these concerts are. And indeed, they can listen to my CDs online. So this is the reason, and this is what happens, and this is how I deal with it. But it makes it possible for me to do a large amount of playing in the street, which I do for money.
Mm-hmm.
No, and I am not a good street musician. A good street musician has a drum on his back, tambourines under, he plays whistles, he plays things at the same time as he plays, he makes a show, he gets a crowd, and he makes good money quickly. I make little money, but I play a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So in actual fact, I'm not a good street musician. But I've always played on the streets since I was a little boy, and I used to play extensively on the London Underground, on the U-Bahn. And I've always done it as part of my income and part of my job.